And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome to the Broken Sea Swag Cast. Tonight on the Swag Cast, we're going to focus on Shark! Yes. I happen to find two horrific tales that are very cool about sharks. I think we need a bigger boat. Always wanted to say that. One is from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and the other is from one of my favorite anthology shows along with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Escape. The CBS show is called The Great White Shark. And the Escape episode is called Shark Bait. And make sure to wait 30 minutes before going swimming. Enjoy. And here's a little bit about the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which was sometimes abbreviated as CBS RMT, which was an ambitious and sustained attempt during the 70s to revive the great drama of old-time radio. The series was created by Hyman Brown, a radio legend due to his work on Inner Sanctum Mysteries and other shows dating back to the 30s. On CBS affiliate, the series began its long run on January 6, 1974 until December 31, 1982. There were a total of 1,399 original episodes. The total number of broadcasts, including reruns, was 2,969. The format was similar to that of classic old-time radio shows such as The Mysterious Traveler and The Whistler, in that a host, E.G. Marshall, introduces each episode and provides some pithy wisdom throughout, but unlike the host of earlier programs, Marshall is fully mortal, whose heightened insight plunged the listener into the world of the macabre. The show began with the ominous sound of a creaking crypt door slowly opening to invite listeners in for the evening's adventure, accompanied by Marshall's disturbing utterance, "Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall." At the end of each show, the door would swing shut, followed by Marshall's classic sign-off, "Until next time, pleasant dreams," segueing into the show's haunting woodwind theme music. Marshall hosted the program every year, but the final one when actress Tammy Grimes took over maintaining the format. Prominent actors from radio and screen performed on the series, from Fred Gwynne, Mercedes McCambridge, Norman Rose, Tony Roberts, Howard DeSilva, Celeste Holm, Morgan Fairchild, Larry Haynes, Paul Hecht, Kim Hunter of Planet of the Apes fame, Zira anyone, Mason Adams, and young John Lithgow, and many others. In 1975, CBS RMT won the prestigious Peabody Award, and in 1990 was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame.
Jesus H. Christ. When I was a boy, every little squid wanted to be a harpooner or a sword fisherman. What do you got here? Portable shark or a monkey cage?
Anti-shark cage.
Anti-shark cage. You go inside the cage? Cage goes in the water. You go in the water. Shark's in the water. Our shark. Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so nevermore shall we see you again.
And now, I'm going to turn it over to E.G. Marshall.
Radio Mystery Theater presents... Simple macho thing, the need to prove themselves at least better, if not best. It can be a drive to smother inadequacy or to conquer fear, or in rare instances, it can be a duel to the death, a matter of evening up the score, This is the story of such a man and his adversary, the great white shark, and of the revenge which Gunnar Trent finally exacted against his enemy.
It's no good sailing, boss.
What, Jimmy?
Woman's on ship is bad medicine. No bring luck.
You might be right about this one.
I have read message in sun. Then I had dream through the Kunapiti. I see written death.
Death? For who?
For one aboard this boat.
Our mystery drama, The Great White Shark, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Michael Tolan. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One. She's a 50-foot twin diesel river witch, the sport fisherman's dream. This is the boat you can't buy. You have to pass judgment of the brothers who build her first. This hull is called the Fair Dinkum, and she is moored in Sydney Harbor. She is owned and operated by a bloke named Gunnar Trent, who is coiling a line as a huge, powerful man in his 50s hails him from the dock.
Ahoy, the Fair Dinkum. You her captain?
She's my boat, yes.
Are you Gunnar Trent?
That's the label. What's yours?
J.H. Burton. I'm looking for a charter.
How many?
Just me and the wife.
What's your game?
The big ones. Marlin. I don't want any sardines. I'm rated over 1,000 pounds.
That takes a little finding.
I got the time. And the money.
$300 a day in expenses.
Money's no object to J.H. Burton, but can you guarantee me my fish?
Can you land it if we fetch it?
You just let me hook in and I'll bring her aboard.
It may take a week or so.
I got time. Within reason.
We have to cruise the Great Barrier Reef. You could fly there, pick up a charter on the spot a lot earlier. Cheaper.
They say you can smell the big ones with your rudder.
That's Jimmy, my Aborigine bloke. He's got the 7 cents. He's my crew and helmsman. I don't know what I'd do without him.
Now look, Trent, you don't have to sell yourself short. I got your reputation.
Now, you still want to sail with me?
It's what I want. And when J.H. Burton wants something, he gets it. I'll pay you $350 a day over expenses, and we leave tomorrow morning on the tide.
Money talks, huh?
All I want is your answer.
Fine with me. You want to check the accommodations?
I know what they are on a boat like this. We'll figure 2 weeks. You get me my fish on a line, and everything's hunky-dory.
And if I don't?
You better, boy. I'm not worried. G.H. from Texas only backs winners. We'll board you by 9 a.m.
The Fair Dinkum will be ship-shape and ready to pull out. I didn't like Mr. J.H. Burton from the start. He was a blowhard and a bully. But we've been laying up for 13 days since the last charter, and we could use the Do-Re-Mi. Besides, I had my own private vendetta to attend to. And maybe, just maybe, a run-up to the barrier might dig him up for me. They were right on time the next morning, I have to grant that. Not that Jimmy and me weren't ready. We always are. What I wasn't ready for was Mr. J.H. Burden's lady. She was a breathtaker and less than half his age. I had a sudden feeling I never should have taken this charter. I could see a rough go ahead.
Morning, Gunner.
Morning, J.H.
I'd like you to meet the ball and chain, Eve. This is Gunner Trent.
I'm very glad, Mrs. Burden.
Hi, Gunner. Can you possibly live up to all I've heard about you?
Oh, I suppose that would depend on what you've heard.
For your reputation. That for a big game fish, nobody sniffs them out like you. The number one captain on the whole east coast of Australia.
That's only because of Jimmy, my special Yamidji. Jimmy, say hello to Mr. and Mrs. Burden.
Yes, boss. Jimmy will say hello. Welcome aboard.
You know where to stow the baggage, Jimmy.
Yes, boss.
Do our new friends bring us good luck?
We will have empty days, but big fish run free. Bye-bye, we cross their path, Maruka.
That's a good omen. For you see, Jimmy is a clever man.
How is that?
Among the Aborigines, there are men of high degree who are psychic. Jimmy is one of those. Before this voyage is over, I'm sure you'll recognize his value. We pulled out at noon and headed for the gap. Once we were in the open with the big swell hitting us, I had my first chance to rate my charters. Neither of them turned gap green. That means sailor stomachs. I had a feeling this was going to be a bonza show. I was on the flying bridge, my butt settled securely at the corner of the aft rail to take the weight off my bad leg, when she came topside to join me.
It's a beautiful harbor, Mr. Trent. Where are we now?
Heading north by west through the gap.
The gap?
The entrance to Sydney Harbor. Now, that's North Head off to the left, South Head on the right.
It's marvelous. The spread of the town around the harbor looks like the Mediterranean.
Now, that'll be all the red tile roofs, I expect. I'll look back over the wake at the skyline.
It looks almost like New York.
So people say.
You haven't ever been to New York?
Oh, yes, right. In another incarnation, you might say.
Now, what does that mean?
Why, I shouldn't have said it. Forget I did.
Did I say something out of tune?
No, I did. We'll button it up at that.
Maybe I'm intruding up here.
No, it's your charter.
Not mine, Dave. Matter of fact, he sent me up to ask how soon we can break out the line.
Well, not till we're through the gap. Then we'll ease up off DY and bait the outriggers to pick up some tuna.
Well, he'll want to be in on that.
Why?
Anytime there's game fish.
Oh, but this is not like American tuna. He's a little chap, 20, 30 pounds. We pick him up for chum is all.
Chum?
A bait, Mrs. Burton.
Can't we make it Eve? I mean, shipmate, after all.
How would that sit with J.H.?
Would you care?
He pays the freight.
Isn't that the truth? Well, supposing I don't care, I'd like you to call me Eve.
Right. Eve it is. Oh, yes, Jimmy, what is it?
Excuse me, boss. Master asked for his busy.
The master's voice. Excuse me, Gunner. I learned when he whistles, I'd better come to heels. Thanks for the travelogue.
Boss, this no good sailing.
What, Jimmy?
Woman's on ship is bad medicine. Go bring back.
You might be right about this one, Jimmy.
Jim, read message in sand. Then he dream through the Kunapipi. And he see written death.
Death for who?
One aboard this boat.
Kind of death.
It's not written clear, but it will be from the water, boss.
Maybe the one I seek.
The white death is of the gods, boss. Men cannot win against him.
I sure put my foot in that shark's mouth the first time. But the next round's mine. I won't be a loser next time I meet up with him.
Hurried death, if you do.
One or other of us. I own the blister I hope to repay.
It is not clear who is to die.
Well, that leaves it to the flip of the coin, the way it ought to be. Even odds. But right off, before personal matters, we have to service our charter. Now, break out those outrigger lines, Jimmy. We've got to start fishing. Time was I'd have set the automatic and helped gear up with Jimmy. But since the accident, I can't move that spry, except in the water. Funny how little difference it makes there, and how much it hobbles me on land. But that's beside the point. Off DY, we trolled and picked us up a few tuna, enough to fill the bait box. We headed north for the Great Barrier Reef, and trouble showed up.
Well, Mr. Charter Captain, 2 days out. Where the devil are the fish?
I told you if you were in a hurry to fly north and get a charter.
I have the charter I want. I just want the fish.
Well, I have no magic magnets. I can't draw them. We have to go where they are.
Now, do you suppose there's any chance we might get there before Christmas?
We'll get there.
What am I supposed to do in the meantime?
That's your problem.
Let me tell you something, Captain Gunner Trent. We get there and you don't show me some modern. That's your problem.
Harry, that's not fair.
You stay out of his email.
Well, we can't expect Gunner to wave some sort of magic wand and deliver you fish for your hooks just because you're impatient.
Forget it, Eve.
Gunner? Eve? They've thrown into quite a cozy little group, hasn't it?
I asked Gunner to call me Eve. It's ridiculous to be any more formal.
I don't much care what he calls you by name. Just so he doesn't think he can call you for anything else.
Yes.
Oh, don't think he doesn't have eyes for you. What guy wouldn't? I just want to make sure he gets it straight. You're off limits to anyone but me.
Maybe you ought to turn in, J.H.
Now, what does that mean?
You're pretty well shanked. Why such your luck?
Who's you explain, man?
You got a big fat mouth. All the money in the world doesn't buy you any rights to go too far or any further.
You calling me out, boy?
I'm calling you a bluff. We want to ride this charter without coming to guts, sir. We better make some guide rules.
Don't you try to dictate any terms to me. It's my money's paying for this trip. And any time I put my money down, I'm going to get value received. And don't you ever forget it. Yes, boy, what the Sam Hill do you want?
Excuse us. Ship's already. They're looking for Mother Burden.
Who is it?
Jimmy, don't know.
Okay, I'll get it. All right with you, Captain?
Your phone call. Help yourself.
I intend to. But just remember, that don't work both ways. What's yours is mine right now, since I'm paying for it. But what's mine is mine all the way down the line. Come on, boy. Show me where this phone call is.
I'm sorry, Gunner.
So am I.
He doesn't care who he hurts or who he insults. He had no right to talk to you like that.
My hide is thick enough. If you, I'm sorry about it.
You learn to live with it.
She's had me on the ropes from the moment I met her. This wide-eyed girl with her steady gaze and the long, lovely legs. I could feel her calling me back into the real world. And I wanted, or I realized how much I wanted to go back to her. I went up from the stateroom to the wheel. J.H. was just hanging up the ship to shore phone.
I got some business that's going to take me back down to Sydney, Gunner.
You giving up the charter?
Not on your life. This won't take me over 2 days. I'll fly down and back.
Well, I'll put into Cairns and drop you there to pick up a flight.
Way ahead of you, son. I got a helicopter coming to pick me up and a plane chartered ready to take off the moment it drops me.
Well, when will we expect you and Mrs. Burden back?
Mrs. Burden, all of a sudden? My formal. Well, Eve won't be back.
Huh?
Because she's not going. I'm going to leave her in your tender care. I hope I can trust you, Gunner.
6 years ago, with someone like Eve, you mightn't have been able to. Since then, I have other things on my mind.
I know, Gunner. I know all about you. When I look up a man, I make sure there's nothing left to know. I wondered why you dropped out of the automobile business.
Then you know I have no time for anything but to make a living while I continue my search.
I do. That's just why I figure my wife is safe with you.
Until I met Eve, he would have been right. Now I wasn't sure. I had a cold feeling between my shoulder blades, remembering Jimmy's prophecy. That old Aborigine pearl diver knew things no other man did. If he smelled death, it was coming. I could almost taste the stale odor of it in my nostrils.
An ill-assorted quartet. A beautiful and desirable woman, far too young to be the wife of the coarse man who has money enough to buy anything. A tall, lean man with a face like a mask, only his eyes revealing the pain of some buried tragedy. A wrinkled, dark brown Aborigine with eyes as bright as buttons, bristling with intelligence and a knowledge beyond the normal. And the uninvited guest, death. I'll continue the story of this charter when I return with Act Two. Just slightly north of the town of Cairns, off the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, the big 52-foot cruiser, the Fair Dinkum, rides at anchor. A high moon does little to dim the bright star patterns of the southern sky. Eve Burden, a long, wispy robe over her bikini, is lying lazily across the stern cushions. Jimmy is busy splicing some lines forward and putting the fishing gear in top shape. Gunner, swinging down off the port ladder from the tuna tower, doesn't notice Eve's big handbag and suddenly stumbles helplessly.
Gunner! Huh. What happened? You all right?
I'm all right. No damage. Except to my pride.
Here, let me help you
out. No. I managed by myself.
Was it my bag you tripped over?
I reckon it was.
I'm so sorry.
No need. It would take a clumsy fool like me to trip over it.
You're not clumsy.
That depends on whether I put my best foot forward or not.
Your best foot?
Or I should say my only one.
I don't understand you.
Confession. I mean, as long as we're going to be alone together, I thought you might as well know all my worst faults.
We're not exactly alone.
Too right. Old Jimmy there. If he wasn't, I wouldn't be here either.
Some things are better not answered. Your ankle, you want me to have a look at it?
You'd have a hard time finding it.
Why?
Because it isn't there. From halfway below the knee down, there isn't any more of me on that side. Just a damn prosthesis, which does very well most of the time.
I'm sorry. I had no idea.
Why should you? I don't go around advertising my shortcomings.
No more than I do.
I shouldn't think you had many.
You might be surprised.
You know what, Eve?
What?
I think what you and me need is a little more company.
Two isn't enough?
Two, when it's you and me, is altogether too much. I'm going to kick her over and head for Cairns. You like to dance?
Yes, but you...
Don't worry. Just so long as I know where I'm putting my foot, everything is busker. Hey, Jimmy.
Yes, Bob?
We're going to up anchor and take her into Cairns. You bring her in while I have a shower and shave.
Where are we heading, Jimmy?
Cairns, you see.
How long do we get there?
Oh, by and by. Maybe one half hour.
You've known Gunner Trent a long time?
Much time. 8, 9 years.
How did you meet him?
In Noumea, New Hebrides. I was pearl diver.
Gunner was looking for pearls?
Oh, no, he come say, look for the big fish. But also he dive with tank and round window over fish.
That's scuba diving.
Right. I find giant clam. Get careless clam close on my leg.
You mean you were caught underwater by a giant clam?
Shell close. No breathing left. Then come boss. He take knife, cap, so shell open. And Jimmy come go to surface and breathe again.
He saved your life.
Jimmy life belong all same to boss.
How did he lose his foot?
He is taken by the White Death.
The White Death?
The great white shark.
How? Were you trying to catch him?
Not catch, you see. Mark.
Mark?
You must ask boss about that. You must ask boss about that and other things. Jimmy, talk too much.
I don't know how long it was since I'd been in right togs. The tie was tight across my throat. We went to the club, and she was the toast of the evening right on. And we danced. Even with the lame foot, I didn't make out too bad. It was a great evening. Later, after Jimmy had fetched us up by tender to the Fair Dinkum, we sat together in the stern having a brandy.
Well, Gunner.
Well, Eve.
Where do we go from here?
Nowhere.
Are you afraid of him?
J.H.
Who else?
No.
Then what is it you're afraid of?
Me first. Maybe last and always.
How?
Hasn't Jimmy told you about me?
In his own way. I don't know all of it.
You want to?
More than anything I can think of in my life.
All right. You asked for it. I was 25 years old and golden boy. Everything I touched came up gleaming. I cornered the market here in domestically produced automobiles and locked to my first billion. But I also had some conscience, and I felt I had to plow back some of the luck I'd had. So I used to do some jobs for the CSRIO.
What's the CSRIO?
Oh, Lord knows. Some government alphabet soup. Commonwealth search and I don't know. All I know is my job was sharks.
Sharks?
Mocking them, do you see?
No, I don't.
Now, they're a big problem for Australia. You can't swim on any protected beaches without a shark net. Can't go up beyond the surf without a sharp eye. So we try to control them, follow their migrations, keep the number down. We can watch them and use them commercially. But mostly, we like to mark the killers.
Now, what do you mean, mark them?
Go oversized with a marker and pin it to the dorsal fin. Sometimes even with a beeper if he's a real predator.
You did that?
Why not?
Well, wasn't it dangerous?
Oh, not so much. Hammerheads, wobegongs are very friendly. You gotta look out for the gray nurses and the tigers. But even they're fair enough dinkum if they're used to you. My mistake was to tangle with a great white.
He sounds enormous, was he?
Not all that much. They can go to 40 feet. My boy wouldn't have been more than 24 or 25.
And you actually swam close enough to him to put a marker on his dorsal fin?
That's the size of it. I didn't think he'd mind. He was friendly enough until I split away. And then...
And then?
He turned on me and took my foot away.
Why?
That's a question I'll be asking him when I finally catch up with him. And taking it out on him in revenge.
Well, what could you do to a fish in his own element?
Well, first off, your shark is not a fish. He's a mammal, just like you and me. And second, plenty. With my scuba tanks, you and I could meet him in a reasonably confined space. I could gouge his eyes out with my thumbs. Cripple him as he did me. And then I could take my time to destroy him with a knife.
And what would that prove?
It would be my revenge.
For what? When the shark injured you, he was only protecting himself. What would his death accomplish for you?
Some justification for the way he lamed me.
Or you lamed yourself.
What?
Oh, come on, Gunner. When you go up against an animal with whom you have no communication, can you blame it for acting on instinct or for the consequences to you?
I don't know if I understand you.
Then let me make it perfectly clear. I don't like to see the best man I've ever met in my life downing himself or turning out to have feet of clay.
1 foot. Just one. And it isn't even clay.
So you lost a foot. That's the end of life. It doesn't give you all that much trouble that I can see. You can still do a man's work. Better than both men. If you were like some, you'd really have something to cry about.
Like who, for example?
Like Chris.
Who's Chris?
My brother. Or what's left of him.
What happened to him?
Skiing accident. He broke his back. He'll never walk again. Or use his arm. He's stuck in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Helpless as a baby.
Oh, Eve.
But he doesn't go around wanting to blow up the slope he took the spill on. He doesn't want to gouge out the eyes of the beginner he had to dodge on a downhill run who was lying right in his path. I don't know how he has the guts to do it. But he's taken what life threw at him, and he still grits his teeth and faces up to make the best of what's left to him.
All right, Eve. What's the difference in your life, what I do?
I want to save you from yourself. But more than anything in the world, I want you. For once in my life, I want to know what it is to be loved by a real man.
Remember, I'm just a hired hand. You're a married lady whose husband foots the bills.
I'm not likely to forget. But I didn't do it for anything I could get out of it. I did it for Chris. It costs a fortune to keep him living. And J.H. Burden is the only man who was able to pay for it.
That's why I sold myself. And it was worth it.
You're some kind of lady.
Oh, God. Gunnar, hold me. Hold me close.
Why did we meet 6 years ago?
It's too late to cry over that. At least, can we have tonight?
It's not enough. For us, it has to be everything.
Or nothing.
I'd give you everything, Eve.
He wouldn't let you.
How could he stop me?
100 ways. Nobody goes up against J.H. Burden and wins.
I'm not afraid of him.
He's as strong as a bull.
1 foot and all, I could still take him.
He wouldn't meet you even up. He'd drown you in lawyers and call in his mafia. You wouldn't stand a chance.
I'd like to call him out. And only one thing stops me.
What?
The shark. That big white enemy of mine that stirs my bile and makes me less than a man. Until I can cut him out of my mind and my life.
Are you asking me to wait for that?
It's the only shot at happiness we have, Eve.
Suppose I test that.
How?
Suppose I tell you that you have to make the choice now. Me or your white death. Which would you choose?
Maduka! Above!
Yes, Jim. What is it?
Bye-bye pretty soon. Here comes Dingo Man by dock.
Dingo Man?
Big boss, charter, lady, husband. Better maybe you get ready to see him aboard Fair Dinkum.
Jay, back already?
So it seems. Maybe just in time to save us both from any more mistakes.
One thing is no mistake. I want you to know it, Gunnar. How, why, so fast, I don't know. But I do know is this. I love you.
What do you ask from me in return?
Not a thing. I guess it was just too late for us both before it began.
But the obverse side of the coin is that many ends are only beginnings. Aboard the Fair Dinkum, once again, are three people, each of whom, in his own way, is a time bomb. And a mystical psychic aborigine who has predicted death on this voyage. But whose death? A human being or the great white shark who haunts Gunnar's dreams? I shall return shortly with Act Three. Rides in deceptive quiet at anchor, this magnificent sportsman's dream of a boat. And all is quiet aboard. The calm before the storm. Only J.H. Burden sleeps noisily but deeply, lulled by his usual quart of spirits. In her bunk beside him, Eve lies with open, dead eyes, chained to her servitude. In his bunk forward, Gunnar Trent is tortured by deep feelings and emotions he thought he had long ago left behind. And cross-legged on the prow deck, Jimmy, the clever man, the psychic, rocks in a private agony as he tries to part the curtain of the future. Then at long last, the sun is risen, and they are underway toward the barrier reef.
You want coffee, boss?
I could use it, Chug. Nice, mate. Anyone stirring below decks?
Not yet, boss. By now we should give up charter. Go back. Our place. Home.
You're still getting bad vibes.
What?
I mean the spirits tell you bad things.
One bad thing.
What?
It's not written clear.
But tell me what you see, Jimmy.
Here is star. 5 faces at point. Jimmy, boss, woman, charter man.
What's the fifth point?
The white death.
So, what do you read in these signs, Jimmy?
One die. Only one.
Which?
It's not said.
What happens to the others?
The spirits say that depends who die. Not good omen. Better we turn back.
I don't think we could, even if we wanted to. We're all charted on collision course. Everyone riding his own private route to disaster. Might as well play the game out.
Man cannot fight the great spirit. He say who die. No way, make change.
Okay, whatever you say, Jimmy. Just the same, I still think I can take care of myself with everything. Except...
Right.
Too right. That's between the shark and me. I'll ever track him down.
It was well on into the day before either of our charter friends stirred up. And then it was J.H. Burden, still drunk with a head to match, dragging himself up to the shark tower to sit by me.
How's the Australian lover this morning? Didn't you hear me, Aussie?
I heard you, J.H. Maybe I just didn't read you.
Oh, we're going to play a little uptight, huh?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Mr. Burden. I'm going to try to disregard you. Otherwise, I might be tempted to knock your head off.
Drunk or sober, I can handle you, Crevel.
You got a foul mouth.
I'm in a foul temper. What does Sam Hill went on between you and my wife while I was missing?
Not one ready thing. More's a pity.
You better be right about that, chum, or I'll nail your carcass to your trance.
I don't take too well to threats, J.H.
If I ride you, why don't you call me?
If we weren't riding some heavy sea right now, I might just do that. Then again, I might just turn around and head back into port.
You will shout on me, boy, and I'll sue you for breach of contract till this boat of yours rots wide on the beach.
I'll take you to get your marlin, and once you've landed him, maybe I'll take your measure for once and all.
I might just look forward to that. I'm going below to fetch my own gear. When I fish, I want to be sure I can trust everything I handle.
It helps sometimes to trust the crew behind you.
I don't need you or your boy, except the Gaff and Lando. I'll pull them in. Just you find them for me so I can hook them.
I was mad enough to chew nails. But I didn't want to have a showdown with J.H. yet. That would wait until after the charter and he'd paid me. Besides, I did have a bit of a guilty conscience. The way I felt about Eve. After all, she was his wife. I didn't want to think anymore. I wanted action. Jimmy?
Yes, boss.
Fetch yourself up here.
Jimmy, come look at his bits, Maluka. Oh, Sam, here now.
Is the missy awake?
Yes, boss. She'll sit by big fish here.
Oh, yes. Good. I want you to fix her and her man some brunch. You can bring me some food up here to the bridge. Then I want you to sit out five lines. Two for stern trawling, both outriggers, and a heavy duty for the chair.
Yes, boss.
All right, up to it.
Better we not fish. Better we turn back.
If I don't get him a marlin, we're out one charter, Jimmy. I want my money.
Better be alive, man. And which one?
What are you reading now, Jimmy?
We keep going. Someone dive us.
Who?
It is not dear to Jim to know where to point the boat.
Or just don't point it at me or Eve or yourself.
It is not my power. That all around great spirit. Better we go back, boss.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. No can do. This time, I've got to pit my gut hunch against your superstition. Something tells me to go on and take my chances. Now you go fix some food. We were running a pretty heavy quartering sea, and I had my hands full for a moment. I did glance down and saw Jimmy talking to Eve. But then my attention was on handling the boat till we fought through the chop. And it was a surprise to realize suddenly that Eve had joined me topside.
Morning, Gunner.
Morning, Eve.
Jimmy tells me we're going to do some fishing this afternoon.
That's the plan. Seems like a right idea, since that's what the charter is all about.
Jimmy doesn't seem to think so.
Jimmy should belt up. He's been filling you full of his superstitions.
He doesn't have to scare me about this trip. It never should have started. Maybe the old fear of a woman being aboard ship bringing trouble is more than superstition.
I look at it differently. I think it's all fate.
I'm scared of what that could mean, Gunner.
Why?
You don't know Jay. He'll never believe there wasn't anything between us.
But there was. That is.
That isn't what I'm talking about. And anyway, in the hard light of day, it's something to forget.
Perhaps not. Once we feed your pig his big fish.
I have to think of Chris.
Anytime I want to go back to the market, I can make all the money that's needed for your brother.
That for me. What about the great white shark?
A man can trade one dream for another. Maybe the old Kacharodon doesn't loom so large anymore.
You'd never be sure.
Well, let me decide that.
And Jay will never give me up.
Now,
we kill you first, or have you killed?
We'll cross those bridges when we come to them. First, I'll let him find his fish. I gave my word on that. The next 3 days, I left it all to business. We pulled in a grab bag of smaller shark, some marlin we cut off the hook, and one 800-pounder we towed in and landed on the reef. But we were still hunting the big game, and J.H. was getting dicier and dicier about it. After weighing up the 800-pounder, we were walking back toward the dock. You don't want to record him?
Hell, that's just bait, old J.H. boy. I'm looking for what you promised me. Something from 12 to 1,500.
I don't remember promising you that.
Just by being who you are, it's what you led me to expect. But time is winding up, boy. I only got maybe a couple more days. You going to deliver?
I don't know how I'd answer that, J.H., except for something Jimmy told me.
Oh, what do I care what some old fool has to say?
Jimmy is my friend.
All right, so what did Jimmy tell you?
That this last trip we will catch the big fish.
How does he know?
He divined it, sensed it.
And you believe him?
I believe it. But that's not all he divined.
What else?
With the fish comes death.
For whom?
He doesn't know. You want to risk it?
Dumb superstition by an old man? You gotta be kidding. Come on, Gunner, we got lots to do. First, we catch my fish. Then we settle some scores.
We put out to sea again. But it looked as if we were in a run of bad luck. J.H. was drinking again and just about to throw a willy when on the second day, we made the strike. It came on the main line out of the chair, and it hit like a ton of bricks, bucketing off to nowhere at the speed of an express train.
Man, oh man, maybe you didn't con me after all, boy. I've hit the big one.
Let him run before you take the strain on that line.
Don't tell me how to fish.
Now, hard a foot, Jimmy. Don't let him foul the stays.
He's looping back.
Can you handle him?
Don't you worry about me. You just don't let him get under the boat and carry away my line.
Watch him, Jimmy.
Let's see, look. Jimmy, don't let him foul.
What is it, Gunner? The big marlin.
It looks as if...
What? Give me a hand, quick. I've got to get into my tanks and scuba gear.
What for?
Don't ask questions. Just help me. Can you hold him, J.H.?
Don't you worry about me, Gunner. Old J.H. ain't letting this big boy get away.
What is it, Gunner?
Give me that strap.
What is it? What I've been waiting for 6 years to come up against.
Not the shark.
Right there, when it's breaking water. You see that fin? And the marker on it. If I had time to put the sonar on it, you'd hear the bleeping.
What are you planning to do?
Hey, that's no marlin. Some kind of shark.
That's right. Not your fish, but mine.
What in the Sam Hill you mean, not my fish? I'm out here on charter and I'm paying for it. This is my fish. No one's taking it away from
that's
me.
That's where you're wrong.
What are you doing with that knife?
Now I'm suited up, I'm going to cut your line. And then it's just between me and White Death there.
I'm cutting my line? This is my fish.
Hey, don't be a damn fool.
For me, you've been spoiling for this. Give me that knife.
Out of the way, Eve. Let me cut the line.
What are you going to do?
I'm going into the water after him. I went down into the water, the end of the cut line in my hand. The tension was suddenly gone, which meant the shark was circling, striking back at J.H., trapped by the line coiled around his ankle. That's when we came face to face. The shark, all 24 feet of him, sliding by, the bloody hook firmly in his jaw, my red marker clamped to his fin. The enemy I'd stalked for 6 years. Was he within my reach to rip out his vitals and exact my revenge? Or did something hold me back? Some feeling of territorial imperative. That these were his waters and I was the invader. That he was wronged and I the wronger. I don't know. I only know that my chance was gone. And it was up to me to decide if this was the end of the hunt or if a new one should begin. I'm sorry, Eve, but he was dead before the shark turned on him.
I wish I could say I'm sorry. But it just seems like fate.
Jimmy read all the signs right.
What about the shark and you?
We've closed our bargain. I don't want any more from him. And I hope he's had all he wants of me. I reckon I'm a free soul again.
Not for a moment. You think you're ever going to get away from me?
That's the advantage of being caught lame. I'd never be able to run that fast.
We shrink in terror from the flashing teeth, the grinding jaws. But the shark has no animus. It doesn't hate us. If we invade his kingdom, we must realize that he doesn't bring the danger. We accept it and bring it upon ourselves. So we take all precautions, of course, and protect ourselves if need be, and hope that the nearest any of us have to get to the great white shark is not in his medium, but only through the medium of a tale such as this. I'll be back shortly. Francis Bacon, the famous philosopher, who said, "Revenge is a kind of wild justice, which the more man's nature runs to, the more the law ought to weed it out. Certainly it is a bitter settlement, if exacted, and twists the man who does." Gunnar Trent was fortunate that instead of finding it, he found love instead. He was one of God's fools, which means he was the luckiest of men. Our cast included Michael Tolan, Ian Martin, and Joan Lovejoy. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
System presents I Love the Mystery. Mountain Morse adventure thriller,
Temple of Vampires. Midnight, high on the ledge above the floor of the Temple of Vampires, somewhere in the jungles of Central America. Jack and Doc Long are facing one of the strangest, most hair-raising moments in their experience. They're out in the center of the temple, each clinging to separate ropes 50 feet in the air. There is no chance for them to swing to the high ledge where Reggie is guarding the boy Hermie, the girl Sunny, and the captive vampire priestess Angelina. There is only one chance for Jack and Doc, to climb the 50 or 60-foot rope to the ceiling of the temple. While they're attempting this, Reggie, unaware of what has happened to his two comrades, is having difficulties of his own in the doorway of the priest's cell high on the ledge. Sonny was still unconscious, and the vampire priestess pretended sleep. Reggie was sitting on the stone bench in the dark, talking softly to Hermie. Suddenly, he became uneasy, arose to his feet, and tiptoed to the door of the cell. As he did so, a fist struck out of the dark, staggering him, and he clenched with the unseen enemy.
That is good. You mean one of us is going over,
and one is you.
Didn't do it, did you?
Now I'm on top for a change.
You will die on floor far below, crushed like eggshell.
Well, I'll believe it when it happens.
See, it will happen.
Well, try this on your jaw. That's what you get for sticking your chin out. I'll drag you back into the cell. Another chicken in the coop.
Reggie?
Huh?
Is that you?
No doubt about it, Hermie. We met the enemy, and he is ours.
I don't want him.
Well, we have him. We're going to keep him, too. He has a nice long cord around his middle to tie him with.
Who is it?
Well, in the dark, it's hard to say. But I think he's our old friend Manuel. We'll see as soon as I tie him up. Hey, have we got a flashlight?
Jack's got one.
Oh, I know that. You haven't got a piece of paper in your pocket, have you?
I haven't got any pocket. Hmm. I ain't even got any clothes.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting in the dark. The original loincloth kid.
Are you tying him up?
As a matter of fact, job's nearly finished.
Gee whiz. I wish I could get some clothes before Sunny wakes up.
Why do you wish that, Hermie?
Hey, she's awake.
Hello, Sunny. You back with us?
Apparently. Where are we?
Hey, you better lay still. Reggie's tying up a guy.
Tying up a guy?
That's quite. And the job's complete. Now that I'll strike a match and have a look at this chatty we just captured.
There's so much I don't know.
Uh-huh, so it is, Manuel.
What's that?
That's right. I've just tied up the high priest himself.
That is not true.
Who's that?
That's Angelina, the high priestess.
You have not got Manuel.
You don't think we have?
No, I do not think so.
Well, he'll wake up in a minute and he can tell you himself.
Where are Jack and Doc?
Still over on the other ledge. Jack brought you over and then went back.
What time is it now?
Just past midnight.
Goodness, what a lot can happen in 3 hours.
Hmm. Well, I wish Doc and Jack would get back. How do you feel?
All right. Hey, Reggie.
Huh?
I've never seen Angelina. May I?
If you want to, but it'll have to be by the light of a match.
That'll do. What do you do?
Sonny won't look at you.
So? Hello.
I kill you.
Angelina, you're really beautiful.
You are blonde, no?
That's right.
No blonde woman is beautiful.
Oh, is that friendly?
I am more beautiful than you.
Yes, I think you are.
Where is Hermie?
Over on the other stone bench.
Tell Hermie to come here.
You hear that, Hermie?
What did you say?
Angelina wants you.
No, I don't like her.
He doesn't like you, he says.
That is not true. I give him figs to eat.
Girl meets boy. Girl gives boy figs, but apparently girl doesn't get boy.
Mm-hmm, she does not. Now then, let's see what's happening to Manuel. He should be coming around.
Got another match?
A whole box. Well, hello there, Manuel. You're awake, huh?
Si.
Hello, Manuel.
You say hello to me?
Sure. You're a rat, but what the heck?
Look here, Manuel, how did you get over here?
Over here?
Over on this ledge. Last we heard from you, you were on the other ledge.
Very secret passage.
You mean you really don't need a rope to get up on that ledge?
That is true.
Well, now, isn't that interesting?
Tell me, where are those other two?
Other two? You mean Jack and Doc?
See.
They're still over on the other ledge.
But I did not see them over there.
Just the same, that's where they are, and I wish they'd get back.
Reggie?
Hmm?
Are you sure they're over there?
Of course I'm sure. I was outside when Jack swung out.
It's funny, Manuel didn't see them.
What do you intend to do with me?
Hold you right here until Jack and Doc get back.
I do not think they will come back, ever.
You'd better forget that sort of talk.
Yes, what do you mean?
They will not come back.
They just better had.
So?
Yes, because if they don't, I'll pitch you and your girlfriend off this ledge, and don't think I'm not the man who can do it.
They will not come back. You'll start praying that they do, if you know what's good for you. An eye for an eye is how we...
Jack?
Yes?
I got a rest in.
All right.
How much further do you think we got to go?
Up 10 or 15 feet, I imagine.
Yeah. My hands and arms ache like toothache.
Yeah, my hands are getting numb.
We must be about 80 or 90 feet up from the floor.
That's pleasant.
Well, what do you say, Jack?
I say that's a pleasant thought.
Oh, yeah.
Well, shall we try it again?
Might as well.
Doc.
Yeah, Jack?
Gotta rest again.
You and me both. Made about 5 or 6 feet that time, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I got me a system of wrapping a rope around my leg. so's I can kind of sit down and rest.
Yeah, it helps.
I sure hope there's some place for us to go when we get up there.
There's got to be.
Well, there better be. I don't like being 100 feet up in the air with no place to go except straight down.
Well, let's go again.
Okay. Hey, Jack. Jack.
Yeah?
We must be almost up. Our rope's getting a lot steadier.
Yeah, I was beginning to feel it.
Hardly swaying at all. Must be only 5 or 6 feet from where the rope's fastened to the ceiling.
Should make it on our next try.
Son, them's the best words I've heard in years. Feel stronger already.
Well, let's go then.
You bet, too. Hey, Jack, I'm touching it. I'm touching it.
Good boy.
And how about you?
Wait a minute. Yes.
Can you tell what the rope's fastened to?
Seems to be some kind of a rock beam.
Yeah, same here. Well, now we're up, what?
Get up on the beam.
Yeah, but how?
Swing our legs up and hook them around the beam, I guess.
Oh, that's great.
What's the matter with that?
And there we are, hanging head down, 100 feet up in the air.
Well, I'm gonna try it.
Well, you watch out, fella. You ain't allowed no mistakes up here.
Don't be so optimistic.
Well, look out below. Here I go.
Keep a grip on the rope.
Hey! Hey, Jack. What's that?
Sounds like an earthquake.
Boy, did this whole temple sway.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Well placed to watch an earthquake from, too.
As if we didn't have enough trouble without that. Hey, hang on. Hang on, Doc.
Man, oh, man.
Doc, are you all right?
I'm still hanging on, if that's what you mean. What happened?
Part of the roof fell in.
And here we are hanging to the rest of the ceiling like a couple of flies.
Adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York, with Mercedes McCambridge as Sonny, Louis Van Ruten as Manuel, and Sarah Fussell as Hermie. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo,
in Steed's apartment, Mrs. Peel was taking a rest with her feet up.
You know, it's much harder than karate, being a dance instructor.
Tough on the feet.
It's more dangerous.
Well, I had a risky afternoon, too. Went to the forwarding address given to me by Peeler's bank manager. Turned out to be a door in a wall, 9 stories up. Nothing on the outside.
Nothing? That drink for me? Oh, thanks.
Very nearly lost the bowler into the street below. You?
Well, apart from everyone thinking my feet are doormats with welcome home written all over them, I've survived. Had a brush with a snake called Bracewell and planted Peaver's shoes in his locker. If they fit, might prove he's the real Peaver. What did the bank manager say?
Well, he identified the snapshot. Said it was the Peaver who came in and closed the account, but the manager had only seen him on that one occasion, so this man could still be an imposter.
Oh?
Yeah. The bank may have been dealing with a real Peaver, and it was the fake one who closed the account.
So, what now?
Well, you'd better get back to work. I'll take the photograph along for the tattooist who worked on the dead man's arm. What was his name?
Toby Tintry of Terrific Tattoos. You know, there are too many T's in this case, Steve.
Then how about the other half of the drink?
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Story in which John Steed finds another body and then joins Mrs. Peel at the studios where she is learning the quick, quick, slow death. Mrs. Peel thought she'd got the raw end of the deal, but then she usually did when assigned to a case with John Steed. Certainly, work as a dance instructor with terpsichordian training techniques had its disadvantages. To start with, all the clients seemed elderly, overlarge, and clumsy men. Attempting to follow them round the small ballroom to the music of an old gramophone was a work of art. Nikki, Emma's companion and fellow instructress, gazed over her partner's shoulder, the despair in her eyes reflecting the pain in her feet. But, professional at her job to the last, she said,
"Why, you're making enormous improvement, Mr. Watkins. So nice on your feet. Oh, you're murdering mine. That's right. Splendid. I think I need a bone graft. Oh, watch out. Here's Lucille.
Right, gentlemen. Another delightful session finished. Run along, then, and we'll see you both again tomorrow. Well, are we ready, girls, for our next delightful session?
So soon?
Now, do I detect a teeny note of discontent in the camp? Oh, it's certainly not. She's teasing you, gentlemen. You are her favorite pupils. Now, run along.
Goodbye. It was at that point that Arthur Peaver entered, a pair of dancing pumps clutched in one hand. Mrs. Peel's eyes never left them.
Mrs. Peel, you will partner this gentleman, Mr. Marsh.
Aye.
Even bigger than the last.
Mrs. Peel, Samba and Black Bottom.
Many a true word. Watch out for flying glass.
And you, Mr. Peaver, Nicky will take you through.
Yeah.
Oh, naughty, naughty, Mr. Peaver. Let me see those shoes. Now, I've warned you before. Look. Nails protruding. You'll absolutely ruin our beautifully sprung floor.
Sorry.
Come along, we'll get you another pair.
Mrs. Peel watched the scene with chagrin, unable to follow Lucille, who turned at the doorway and said,
"Get on with the lesson, Mr. Peel, if you please."
"Yeah, this girl will listen. Aye, aye, Samba. Aye, aye, Samba."
Size and enthusiastic. That's too much. I'm going to claim danger money.
Mrs. Peel, holding her partner at arm's length, took the floor, while in the locker room...
"Yep. Skandowski also..."
"Shh, English. I told you, see, only English here."
"But I don't understand. What was all that about?"
"Nothing that need bother you. You're just Arthur Peaver, remember? A quiet little Englishman. Now,
Change into these other pumps.
Lucille Banks selected another pair of shoes. Peeper reached out for them. As he did so, the sleeve on his right arm rode up a little. Lucille reached forward, reacted with a gasp.
Excuse me, I'll be right back.
She left the locker room hurriedly and went to find Ivor Bracewell, who was admiring himself in a full-length mirror as he practiced a few dance steps.
Ivor, stop jogging about and pay attention. It's urgent, very urgent.
Why, what is it?
The tattooist. We forgot all about the tattooist. How could we have been such fools? Quickly, it's not too late. Not if we act now, at once.
Business was not brisk at Toby Tintry's tattoo workshop, but Toby, artist to his fingertips, was putting in a little practice. With a very fine drill, he was tattooing a large, pink, garlic sausage. Toby Tintry hardly looked up from his work. He was engrossed.
Oh, come in, come in. You don't mind holding on for just a moment, do you? This is a little fad of mine, practicing on a garlic sausage. Helps to keep my hand in when things are a bit slack. You see, you need a very delicate touch indeed. Unlike human skin, which is surprisingly tough, one false move on a sausage, it's all torn to pieces. Now, what can I...
Tintry stopped. A man had approached the counter. He placed his left hand on it. Tintry, glancing sideways, saw clearly tattooed on the wrist a rose. He put the drill down.
Oh, that's nice. Now, not my work, of course, but I can appreciate another's crafts. Oh, it's marvelous, yes.
Tintry broke off as his eyes went from the tattoo to the man's other hand. In it, as though by magic, had appeared a pistol. It was fitted with a silencer.
What? What is it? You!
Tintry gasped and fell behind the counter. The drill started to whirl away, jumping and jerking on the end of its cord. The assassin, who had not uttered a word, walked out of the shop. Toby Tintry, mortally wounded, dragged himself painfully toward the drill.
Oh, God. Got to tell. Oh, God.
It was some 40 minutes later when John Steed arrived.
Shop? Anyone at home?
The sound of the tattooist's drill caught Steed's ear. He walked over and switched it off. It was then that he saw Tintry's legs sticking out behind the counter.
What the devil? Dead all right. What's this?
Steed reached down and picked up the very large pink garlic sausage. One side had a superb picture of Tower Bridge. The other read,
"The killer has a rose tattoo on the right wrist."
Well, that's a clear enough clue, surely, Steed. In the dance salon, Mrs. Peel was enjoying a welcome tea break. She walked right by the large, tiresome gentleman who couldn't samba and sat down next to Arthur Peaver.
"May I offer you some refreshment, Mr. Peaver?"
"Oh, you are most kind."
"Nonsense, it's part of my job. Besides, I want to get to know you better."
"Oh, too kind."
"Well, why not? I mean, if I'm working here, we'll be getting to see quite a lot of each other in the future, shan't we?"
"I regret that will not be the case, Mrs. Peel."
"Oh?"
"I shall soon be passing out."
"Passing out?"
"I am within a fishtail of receiving my diploma in ballroom dancing. When I have that, I shall have no need to attend classes. I shall pass on, Mrs. Peel, and we shall not meet again. Excuse me, please."
"Hello, Emma.
Suffering? Why not put your feet above the level of your head? It soothes them so much that the agony's only excruciating."
"Nicky, Mr. Peaver was telling me you'll be receiving his diploma soon."
"That's right."
"Yes, but I've been dancing with him. If dancing's the word."
"Oh, no, he's terrible. Well, then why the diploma?"
"Good for business, I suppose."
take their money, give a few lessons, and hand a diploma to another satisfied customer. Funny, though, how Lucille hands out those diplomas. It isn't everyone who gets them. They're just handed out to a select few. Then, diploma in hand, they disappear. Never knew one who came back later.
And here we have our most exclusive dance studio, with a beautifully sprung floor, fully trained dance instructors in attendance at all times. You can see how well equipped we are, Mr. Steed.
John Steed, who was with Lucille, allowed his eyes to stray to Mrs. Peel.
You are indeed fully equipped.
Right. Now we can take some particulars. Now, this form. Your name?
Jonathan Steed.
A fine old English name.
Well, we came over with the Vikings. They were between raids and discovering America at the time.
Then you are British by birth.
Birth, nature, and inclination. Though I haven't spent much time here of late. Been abroad, you know, only returned last week.
To see your family?
Ah, alas, I regret I have no family and no friends.
And you wish to learn to dance?
Well, brush up more than anything, you know. One point in time, I swung a rather elegant shoe, but now I'm fearfully rusty.
I see. Well, you may have your first lesson whenever convenient.
Why not right now?
Oh, very well. Excuse me, I'll make the necessary arrangements.
Steed strolled around the studio and ended up near Mrs. Peel.
What are you doing here?
Looking for a killer with a rose tattoo on his wrist.
What?
Here, take this parcel, read the message, and destroy it.
Destroy it? How?
Eat it, Mrs. Peel, if you can.
Hope you're keen on garlic sausage, Mrs. Peel.
Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo.
Everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield gasolines with Xylene, Richlube all-weather motor oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps.
Tonight, we escape to a charter fishing boat in the waters off the little Central American country of Nicaragua. And the story of the violence and terror that suddenly developed there. As Anthony Ellis tells it in his exciting tale, Shark Bait.
I just come out of the hole they call El Splendido. Passes for a hotel in Puerto Morazan. They call it El Splendido, I guess, because of the bigger and better cockroaches. Funny thing is, there are always a few Americans there. They come down to Nicaragua for the fishing. Two of them, a man named Williams and his daughter, had chartered my boat for the next morning. It was getting dark when I walked down to where the boat was tied up, and as I came to the shack that palmed itself off as a cocktail bar, I knew it was time for a drink. The joint was called Joe's. Nobody knew why, since it belonged to a fat, happy Portuguese named Miguel Pereira, who in his spare time dabbled in everything from cut-rate murder to dope. He was a good man not to trust. Went to a table, and he stopped plucking his guitar long enough to bring me a warm beer.
Buenos tardes, Capitán Hook.
Hi, Mike.
He is hot today, eh?
Yeah.
You are the first person for cocktails all day today.
Now, that's tough.
But when it gets dark, the Americanos will come in. Then I make up my loss.
I'll bet you do.
I have heard some interesting talk today.
Is that so?
I would not breathe it to a soul but you.
Go on.
Across the border, they are ready.
Oh, the rebels again?
So they say. Ah, oh, those Hondurans. I have heard something else.
Huh?
They are bringing guns in for the attempt.
No kidding.
See. They pick them up from a Honduras fishing trawler off the coast tomorrow night. Then take them to Point Maria here in Nicaragua.
Well, that's the point, a couple of miles below Puerto Morazan, isn't it?
See, from there they carry the guns across the border to Honduras.
Well, that's pretty slick.
These things I have heard, amigo.
You're a true conspirator, Miguelito.
There is something more. And believe me, dear friend, I would tell it to no one but you. The guns arrive at Point Maria at 30 minutes past 10 tomorrow night.
Well, that's valuable information, Mike. You'd better not tell anybody else. You know, you might get yourself into trouble.
Oh, but of course I would not. You I tell because I can trust you as you can trust me, Capitán Hook. Come, I bring you another beer, eh? And Joe's cocktail bar, free.
My customers came aboard the next morning at 5:30. Mr. Williams, short and fat, with a prissy little mouth that smiled and sparkling eyes. His daughter looked all right. There were two other men with him. I didn't like that, though. Strangers in Central America, particularly these days, can mean trouble, and that was something I didn't want. My deckhand, Sam, was standing by to cast off.
Hey, Captain Hook. I should like you to meet Mr. Baxter and Mr. Gordon.
How do you do?
Gentlemen.
They're staying at the El Splendido. Missed you last night when we made the charter. They're coming with us.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Williams.
Wonderful day. It should be great for fishing.
Look, Mr. Williams, my charter calls for only two, you and your daughter.
Well, my dear fellow, Mr. Baxter and Mr. Gordon are my guests. You'll be paid accordingly. Now, that's settled. Shall we shove off?
Okay.
All right, Sam, cast off.
See you, Jocko.
Beautiful, isn't it, Captain?
It's all right, Miss Williams.
That's because you're used to it. I've never seen water like this before.
No?
Your deckhand. You call him Sam.
What about him?
Sam. He is Spanish, isn't he?
What? Rest is Nicaragua.
Why do you call him Sam? Is that really his name?
No, but it's easier. The other one's too long.
He calls you Jocko?
It's Jonathan, but he can't pronounce it.
Strange to find a man like you down here running a charter fishing boat and with a name like Captain Hook. It's very romantic.
I'm glad you like it.
Oh. Am I annoying you?
No, of course not, Miss Williams. It's my job to answer questions.
I see.
Captain, that dark patch of water over there. You see?
Yeah.
It seems to be moving.
It is. Manta raya.
Manta raya?
A giant manta ray. We stay away from him. It's healthy.
Oh, my camera. I must get a shot. Can you get closer?
I can, but I won't.
Well, now, look here. There's no need to use that tone with me. I'm hiring you. I want to get a picture of the beast.
I'm sorry. I'm chartered for fishing. This is a 46-footer. Now, your beast is about 35 feet across, and he's bad-tempered, too. Nothing doing.
Oh, very well.
Jocko!
What?
Albacore!
Where?
On the port bow.
I see him. Forget your manta ray, Mr. Williams. Look, albacore. Tell your friends to get ready. Better let me try for the first one. If we lose him, the rest will get away. Watch those outriggers, Sam! Mr. Williams, break out your gear. This is it. It was a school of fish you see once in a lifetime. When you tie onto one of those babies, you got something. I turned the wheel over to Sam and got set. The albacore took the feather jig like a crazy horse, only 10 times faster. I knew that if I lost him, it was goodbye school. That's the way albacore are.
Oh, you've got him, you've got him.
Come on, get those lines wet. Yeah. Over on the other side of me, Baxter.
Right.
No, Baxter, look out, you're crossing my lines.
I'm sorry.
No, get around me.
Oh, yeah.
Here, not that way, you fool, you're fouling me. Under me, under me.
Oh.
That did it. There goes the line.
I'm sorry, Captain.
Forget it. Well, you won't see albacore again today, Mr. Williams. There they go.
Dear, dear. Too bad. Oh, well, that's luck. Oh, come along, Baxter. We'd better have a beer.
Good idea.
After all that excitement, I could almost feel the fight in them. It's really too bad, but accidents will happen.
All right, Sammy, I'll take the wheel.
See you, Jocko. Perhaps we catch something else later.
Yeah.
You're angry, aren't you, Captain?
What? No.
Oh, yes, you are. Mr. Baxter hadn't been so clumsy, we would have caught albacore.
That's right. And I'll tell you something else.
What?
I don't think that either Baxter or his friend Gordon are fishermen.
They are. The hotel last night, they said so.
Don't kid yourself, not the way Baxter handles a rod.
But they
said... And another thing, he's carrying two guns and shoulder holsters.
Oh?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's their business. Mine's to find fish.
You're not afraid of very much, are you?
Listen, why don't you go and sit up forward?
Are you afraid of me?
Look, I've taken too many spoiled dames on these trips. Like smallpox, I'm immune.
And I'm bored.
You talk like a bad movie. Now go cut up mullet or something. I'm not expendable. We cruised for another couple of hours. Sighted one marlin tied into another. That is, Mr. Williams did, but he lost it. Baxter and his quiet friend didn't fish much. They watched. I didn't like that any better. We landed a few barracuda. Big, nasty devils that could rip the meat off your arm in a second. And it was hot. Sun bounced back from the glassy water and made you wish you were somewhere else. And then it was afternoon. Those two guys just sat. They were making me nervous. Williams drank beer and perspired while his daughter kept casing me. I figured she was getting ready for another try when we saw the boat. It was a fisherman flying the Honduran flag.
Oh, not very good sport today, eh, Captain?
It may get better.
It's too bad I missed that marlin.
There'll be another.
I hope so. First the albacore and then marlin. Hey, on your right.
Huh?
What sort of craft is that?
That's commercial fisherman.
Oh, quite large, isn't she?
They take a lot of fish.
Of course. I'd like to get a picture, if I may.
I thought you wanted to fish.
I do.
Right, then I'm headed down the coast.
Well, would it take long to get close enough for a picture?
No, it wouldn't be worth it.
Huh?
She's Honduran. I don't want trouble.
Trouble, Captain?
In case you haven't heard, Honduras is ripe for another revolution. What? We're under the Nicaraguan flag. I'm not taking any chances.
I don't understand.
It depends whose side the fishermen are on. If they're Honduras government, it's all right. If they're not, they might like to have my boat.
What?
It's happened before.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Revolution. Well.
Captain. That ship, she seems to be signaling.
No, what about it?
Mr. Gordon knows a little about signal pennants.
Does he? Like he knows how to fish?
I think it's a distress signal.
Yes, you ought to find out.
Distress? Is that so, Captain Hook?
Could be. Could be a trick.
I don't understand. If they're in distress, it's our duty to...
When we first sighted her, there wasn't any signal. Now she very conveniently runs one up. I don't like it. We're putting back to Puerto Morazan.
We better take a look.
Not on my boat. Sam!
Aye, Jocko.
We're through for the day. Take in the outriggers. I'm sorry, Mr. Williams, but I don't like this charter.
Now,
you'll get
here.
Your money back.
But you can't do that. I...
Stay on the course.
Nuts.
I insist, Captain.
Mr. Baxter, what are you doing with a gun? Are you crazy?
Walk over here slowly, Hook. Come on, I mean it.
Well,
all right, Gordon, take over.
Right.
I've been wondering about you ever since you boarded.
Have you? Well, now you know.
Mr. Baxter, really, you have no right to endanger us all. This is going too far.
Keep out of this, Mr. Williams.
You're pretty interested in that trawler, aren't you?
Yes, that's why we've borrowed your boat. If you give us any trouble, I'll shoot you in the leg and throw you overboard. I imagine you would make excellent sport for the shark in Barracuda. They have an extraordinary scent for blood, Captain Hook.
Did you know that today's motor car is the most powerful ever built? But it needs gasoline to match. It needs gasoline containing xylene. Xylene, a great discovery of modern science, puts a new dynamic wallop in gasoline. That's because xylene is one of the highest antinoc gasoline components ever discovered. A super component to give your car new, higher antinoc performance. Today, every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains xylene. Try Richfield gasoline on a gear shift hill. Press down on the gasoline pedal. Feel your car leap forward. That's what Xylene in Richfield gasoline does. You get new high anti-knock, new power, new mileage economy. What's more, you have a choice of two great Richfield gasolines with Xylene. The Richfield dealer offers Richfield Ethyl. Ethyl at its best for best results in highest compression motors, or Richfield High Octane at regular price for the average car. Stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. Get Richfield gasoline containing Xylene. And now we return you to Escape.
Well, it was nicely done. One minute I was the skipper of my boat, the next I was waiting to see if Baxter wasn't going to put a bullet into me. I knew he wasn't kidding about those shark and barracuda, so I decided to play along. Gordon may not have been a fisherman, but he knew how to run a boat. And he headed straight for the fishing trawler.
Well, what does it mean, Captain Hook?
You tell me, Mr. Williams. How long did you say you'd known those guys?
We met them last night, Jonathan.
Yeah?
Well, certainly. Well, you don't for one minute suppose that I would have invited them had I known this was going to happen. Whatever are they up to? I've never heard of such a thing.
It's rather exciting.
Dina.
I've got an idea.
Oh?
I told you they're ripe for a revolution in Honduras.
Yes?
That trawler might be carrying guns.
Guns?
Mm-hmm.
But why? I mean, what's the point of taking over your boat?
Unload guns, put them aboard us for the revolutionists.
What? But Baxter couldn't have known we were coming out here. Oh, I don't believe it.
Sure he could.
How?
You could have told him.
I?
That's right. Last night I told you I'd run out from Puerto Morazan for about 2 hours, you remember?
Huh?
Even told you the direction, south-southwest.
Yes. You said we'd have a chance at Marlin and possibly Tarpon. Yes. I guess I did mention it to them.
Okay. That's why Baxter didn't want us to stop for those albacore. He and his pal made a deal with the skipper of that boat to meet him somewhere around here and at about this time.
Oh?
It's only a guess, but it'll do for now. And it was a good guess. 10 minutes later, we tied up alongside the trawler. She was filthy enough, but she wasn't fishing and she wasn't in distress. The crew was right out of a Sabatini novel. They didn't have cutlasses, but they had plenty of guns, and not the government kind, either. The skipper had a few words with Baxter while Gordon covered us. Then a package changed hands, and they began to put the boxes on our deck. A couple of the deckhands stowed them below and in the cabin. We had quite an arsenal aboard when we pushed off.
Well, Captain Hook, you wanted to put back into Puerto Morazan, so we shall.
Are you kidding?
Not at all.
If those are guns, how do you think you're going to get them into Nicaragua?
Nobody said anything about guns. I shouldn't worry about the contents of the boxes. We shall wait until night, then put into Point Maria. We'll put the cargo ashore there.
Just like that?
Just like that.
You get paid off, and somebody else worries about getting them over the border into Honduras, huh? Yeah, that sounds familiar.
If that is my plan, you have described it perfectly. And, Captain, remember, it's pointless for you to attempt any heroics. Our stakes are rather high, and we should prefer not to kill you.
You won't kill me, don't worry.
Your boat will be returned to you, and there'll be a bonus for your rather unusual charter.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Well, I'm going to join Gordon at the wheel now, and keep in sight, Captain.
Psst. Jocko. Sammy. Stay down, they can't see you.
Jocko, they think I am below. I behave very scared. They did not trouble to search me carefully. I have my knife.
Good boy. Not now, though. Stay out of the way. If we get a chance, up. Duck, here comes the dame. Well, where's your father, Miss Williams?
In the cabin, worrying. Who were you talking to just now?
Huh, me? Talking? Oh.
Yes, you were. I know. It's your deckhand, Sam, isn't it?
Keep your voice down.
Sorry. Haven't they missed you?
Probably not. Sam can look like a real scared Indian when he wants to.
He isn't scared, is he?
No.
You've got a plan.
Maybe.
I could help.
No, just stay out of the way.
But I want to help. What can I do?
What's your first name?
Dana.
That's no name for a girl.
Well, it doesn't matter. I am a girl.
Yeah, I can see that.
What do you want me to do?
Go over to the wheel. Gordon hasn't got a gun in his hand. Baxter's the one to watch. Get him talking, and if you can move him in front of me, cut him off for about 5 seconds, right?
But you haven't got a gun. What can you do?
Not me, Sam. I forgot his knife. He can do tricks with one. Just give him time to get a good throw, that's all. When I yell, duck.
Where is he?
Inside the bait tank behind me.
All right.
I'll take care of Gordon. You still game?
Of course.
All right, go on. Sam.
See, Jocko?
Get set. Did you hear what I told him?
I hear.
Make it good, boy. If you miss.
I won't miss, Jocko.
Now she's talking to him now, Sam. You haven't got much time.
I'm ready.
I'm going for Gordon. We'll get him off guard. If you miss with a knife, rush him.
Okay, Jocko.
All right, now, Sam.
Look out!
Stay where you are, Captain Hook. That was most unwise.
Jonathan, you must have seen him. I couldn't help it.
Sam. Sam.
I'm sorry, Jocko. I was not fast with the knife. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on, Sam. You'll be all right, Sam. There we go.
We have one good, fine time together, Jocko.
Sure. Sure we do, Sam. And lots more.
Put him overboard, Captain.
What?
Put him over the side. He's dead.
Listen, you're murdering...
I want no dead bodies in this boat. Might be difficult to explain if anyone came aboard before we reached land. Put him over the side.
I picked him up in my arms. He was very light. The little mestizo who had been with me for 3 years was dead. Sam was dead. He looked like a sleeping child, except for the bloodstain creeping over his wet shirt. I stood at the rail for a moment. Then I let him go. He fell astern of us, and I had to watch. I knew what was going to happen, but I had to watch. So did Baxter. I could feel that murderous fascination as he waited. Then there was a swirl. And another. The water boiled with triangular fins. And Sam was gone. After that, I just waited. Williams and the girl didn't show. It was just me and those two at the wheel. And it began to get dark like it does down there. We didn't show any lights. Gordon was still at the wheel, and I could see the glow of Puerto Morazan off the port bow. There was no moon, just sudden blackness. Must have taken Carter by surprise, because when he called to me, I wasn't sitting by the bait tank any longer. I was around the other side with a big gaff hook at my hand.
Captain... Captain!
Why didn't you watch him?
Never mind that. He's still aboard. Hook! I'm coming to get you. Now be a fool. Hook! This is your last chance. I swear I'll shoot.
I caught sight of his figure for a second against the glow of the town, then he was gone. But I was ready. I could hear him. Just a couple of more steps. One, two, three.
Hook! You're a fool!
I'll put on the light.
No. They'll see us from shore.
Then I could hear him breathing. And I hit out with a gasp. And I caught Nexter in the throat. He went down hard, dying fast. I grabbed his gun and moved quietly toward Gordon at the wheel.
Did you kill him?
Baxter can't hear you, Gordon. He's dead. All right, drop it. Drop it! I got away from the wheel. Okay. Williams! Williams, get out here. It's all right. I've got him.
Captain Hook. Oh, well done. Mustn't have taken a lot of nerve to do that. It's wasted. Sorry, Captain Hook.
It was dark again when I came around. I could hear voices up forward. I'd been a sucker, and I knew that the four of them had been in it together.
Can't take it any closer. Baxter knew these waters. I don't. We could hit anything. Rocks, shoals. We wouldn't have a chance. The sharks.
If we hadn't been so careless, this never would have happened.
Well, what's the use of talking? We've got to do something. Look.
What?
Isn't that a point over there on your left?
Yes. Yes, that might be Point Maria.
Now I understood why Sam had died. The girl must have told Baxter what was going on, then faked the routine we'd worked out. That's when she got so cozy with me, just to make sure she'd know what I was up to. And it was quite a setup. It's a lot of dough and running guns, and it takes all kinds to do it. And I decided it was about time to let them know I was awake.
Well, Captain. You feeling better?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to hit you quite so hard.
No, I'm sure you didn't.
You caused us quite a little inconvenience, you
know.
Yeah?
I'll bet Sam's sorry for you, too. That's a nice kid, your daughter. She pulled wings off of flies when she was younger?
Not my daughter, Captain. Dana's, well, shall we say, a partner in the enterprise.
Oh?
And we have a proposition to put to you.
Oh?
Frankly, we need your help. Mr. Gordon is unable to discern the landmark we have chosen. Baxter might have found it, but, well, Captain, we needn't go into that. I offer you $1,000 if you would take us in to Point Maria, where we should be able to see the signal.
Sorry.
$2,000.
Find it yourself.
Shoot him. He'll only give us more trouble.
Yeah, do that. Then explain how Sam and I disappeared when you get back to Puerto Morazan. By the way, have you checked the fuel?
It's almost empty.
That's right.
All right, Captain. What do you want?
Look, Williams, suppose I take you in, and we decide on a fair deal when we get there.
Very well. You have my hand on it, Captain?
Yeah. Gentlemen's agreement.
Are you sure this is Point Maria?
I'm sure. Do you want me to signal?
No, we'll wait. We had to pick up the guns at 10:30. The boats will put out from shore.
It's 10:30 now.
We'll wait.
It's okay with me. 5 minutes went by, and we heard the sound of muffled oars. From out of the blackness riding out to us on the swells came 3 boats. I was at the rail when the first man lumbered heavily over the side. It was the owner of Joe's Cocktail Bar, Miguel Pereira, still fat and still happy. 4 others followed, well-armed, stood waiting.
Ah, Captain Hook, my good friend, and Senor Williams.
Yes.
But I did not know that you were acquainted. Well,
the captain was kind enough to assist in delivering your consignment, Senor Pereira.
So? Ah, now I understand. You and the captain have become partners, what? Eh? You used these both for the task. Very good.
Not partners, Michael. These are my guns.
Oh, come now, Captain Hook. You're getting a little out of your depth, aren't you?
You might as well start unloading, Mike.
But, there is only one consignment?
That's right, mine. Williams wasn't able to pick his up.
Wait a minute. Are you running us, too?
You, Captain? You're running guns?
Yeah. It wasn't nice of Mike not to tell you about me, and it wasn't nice of him not to tell me about you. Would have been simpler to let us do the whole thing instead of splitting it up, Mike.
Never mind what was nice. I know what I'm doing. It was safer this way. If one of you were caught, the other would get through. Mr. Williams said he arranged for a boat and would pick up his guns this afternoon from the trawler and bring them here this evening. And you, my dear friend, were to pick up yours tonight, as I told you.
That's right, you've got them.
Now, look here, if you think I'm going to be double-crossed like this, you can...
Go ahead. There's a load of guns waiting for you out on that Honduras fisherman. Pick them up. This one's my deal.
Well, I tell you, Senor Pereira, these are mine.
We must have the other shipment of guns tonight.
Looks like you're not going to, Mike, unless I can get them for you.
You're not going to get away with this, Captain Hook.
You will return to the trawler tonight, Captain?
Sure. You'll have to pay me first for these.
It is done.
Oh, no. We made a deal, Pereira. I am not...
You did not keep your bargain, senor. Obviously, these are the captain's guns. Please, no violence. My men are nervous. That is better. Here is the money, my friend.
Thanks, Mike. I'll give it to Sam's wife. It won't make her feel any better about Sammy, but it may help a bit.
Well, Captain Hook, you've done quite well, haven't you? Where does all this leave us?
Out, Mr. Williams. If you're smart, right out of Central America. And if I were you, I'd do my fishing in a lake from here on. It's healthier.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robson. And tonight has presented Sharkbait by Anthony Ellis. Featured in tonight's cast were Bill Conrad as Captain Hook, Mary Shipp as Dana, Will Gere as Williams, John Daner as Baxter, Steve Roberts as Gordon, Harry Bartell as Sam, and Paul Fries as Miguel. Special music was arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
Have a good evening. Come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.